Welcome back to Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Harsh, and this is the show where we break down the builds, the gear, and the people actually out there making this stuff work. And today's episode is a big one because we're talking to two guys who sit right in the middle of what makes this hobby function. I'm joined by Corey and Andrew from CNA Prop Design. And if you've built a pack, modded one, or even thought about upgrading one, chances are you've seen their work. They are known for their parts that don't always get the spotlight, but completely change how a build performs. Vent systems, cable runs, hose connectors, the stuff that turns a static prop into something that actually feels alive. We're going to get into how they got started, how they approach solving problems for builders, and what that really means for you people out there trying to make your pack and take it to the next level. Corey, Andrew, welcome to Bench Tested.
How you doing?
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Corey, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get into this?
Oh, man. I've actually been in this type of prop building since the early 2000s, when mainly the community was starting to take off back then. And that's, I think I built my first pack in 2001, 2002.
Oh, wow.
Actually, like something that looked that it was used, you know, something that replicated to a degree.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much back then that was available. So you kind of had to make do with what you had. Electronics, they didn't really exist back then. You had your few eBay sellers that had what, it was, you know, basic stuff that you kind of had to tie together and make work. And most of it was done on like breadboards and stuff. So that was when I first built my first pack. And then went through my 20s. I could have done something more with it, but I just went a different route in my 20s. And once I got into building my second pack, which was 2008, I want to say 2009, oh, probably 2009, 2010, I built a second pack, and it was like scratch built. The motherboard was plywood. The whole thing was like built with plywood and different components and PVC, and I got it as close as I could. I made my own ribbon cable. What electronics did they have back then? I can't remember. It was probably Jupiter Electronics that was, I think they were doing bar graphs and LEDs and stuff for the wands. So I threw one of their kits in there and like kind of made my own sound effects board with, you know, clipped files and MP3s from just random stuff that I found and tied it into a breadboard. And it was it's not what we have today, I could tell you that much, but yeah. It was fun, you know. I ended up selling that pack to a guy in Texas, and I never saw it again. So I have a picture of it. And then that was the last pack I built before the one I have now. The one I have now is pretty much what got me to the point of starting CS Prop Shop was the, you know, the beginning name. And I started this pack in 2019. And the funny thing about this pack, I bought it from Ben of Kent just because he included everything, you know, like all the resin parts, the shell, everything was there.
Yeah.
That you could build the base from. So I purchased that. And the only way I was able to purchase that, I am an avid Hot Wheels collector. I won a raffle for a diecast car on a $20 raffle that was worth the cost of a Proton pack. So I traded one hobby for the other, and that's what started this. That is where we are now. You know, 6 years later, but that's kind of how I got into, you know, CNA prop design. Once Andrew came in, I'll let him speak for himself. That things just took off because he's good at what he does. I'm good at what I do. And we collaborate also with certain other prop builders out there as well. So that's kind of a back history of where I'm at with it. I was a Ghostbusters fan when I was 3 months old. My mom took me to go see the movie in theaters. So, you know, my whole life has been Ghostbusters. And the early 2000s is when I started building the stuff from the movie.
That's awesome. Yeah, so many people, it seems like, started, you know, you started in the early 2000s, but I think it really ramped up right around pandemic time. I think people were like, yeah, there's nothing to do. Let's build a proton pack. Andrew, what about you?
yeah, so, I mean, I started, I can remember 89, probably when Ghostbusters 2 came out, and that's really what hooked me. And then that got me into, like, Ghostbusters 1, the 84 movie. I mean, I watched that VHS over and over again. I remember popping that tape, like, 3 times, and my parents getting mad because, you know, VHS tapes were, like, $60. And then after that, I just started, like, collecting a lot of RGB stuff, like, real Ghostbuster stuff, and being into the cartoon. And then I eventually got to a point where I was probably in college, around 2006 or so, and I was like, I want to build my own pack. And then, just like Corey said, there wasn't much to go on. You scan some boards or some pages on the internet back then, and what would pop up would be like Stefan Otto's plans, or like Vanky's plans, or anything from those old GB fans boards, and you would have to piece this stuff together from, you know, like cardboard or like plywood or things like that. So yeah, like 2006 is when I built my first pack with those like yellow plans or whatever.
Dude, I still have those.
Yeah, I still have those too. I have like folders of that and that stuff. But yeah, I remember my dad owned a custom cabinet shop. So I was there like every weekend, like measuring out like fine details, like making this like wood sculpture. And originally I had this plan where I was gonna make like a buck, and then I was gonna fiberglass the buck and like make shells and stuff like that, but it got too like out of control, and I was like, this is too much work. And so then eventually I just built a wooden pack, and I was wearing that for like a year, and that was like, you can imagine, probably like 60 pounds all built out of junk and scraps.
The good old days.
Yeah, exactly. I had no electronics, nothing, but the thing looked pretty good. I ended up selling that pack through eBay, which was a whole nightmare. But some guy brought it in like California. And then after that, I was like, I need to build like a more accurate pack. So I started collecting parts and pieces and stuff. And I think I built half of a pack. And then kind of went, like, life got in the way, and I kind of petered out there for years. I want to say like almost 10 years. I was just collecting parts and pieces. And then, like you said, Charlie, during the pandemic, that's kind of like when this big resurgence happened, and everyone was like looking for something to do. And they went right back to their hobby. And I found, I guess it was one of the pages on Facebook, like there was this big like community resurgence of Ghostbusters, and people were building packs again and asking questions, and it was like a big like camaraderie thing. And then I started building again, and that's where I ran into Corey, because Corey had built some pieces. I think we were talking the other day, and Corey, you were making like an end filter, or the grate, like an accurate grate for the end.
Yeah, the mesh yeah, strip, yeah, for the end, yeah, filter, and the red stripe.
Yeah, so obscure. But like, I remember like messaging Corey and being like, oh, I've never seen that, like that mesh or the tape. And like, we were talking about it, and he's like, oh, I'll send you some. So he like sent me some, or I bought some off of him or something. And then we happened to be building the pack like in sync. It was like crazy, because he's like, I'm moving to the wand next. And I'm like, oh, I'm moving to the wand too. And he's like, what are you using? He's like, I'm Ben of Kent. And I'm like, oh, I got a throwing chicken wand. So then we started building our wands together, and that's like kind of how we met. So we started like doing that kind of stuff.
I walked him on how so I designed my own pop mechanism for the front handle with the rotating grip.
Yeah.
And it was all out of aluminum, and I had to send him all of the parts information so that he could order all the exact same parts. Yeah. So there was a lot of sanding involved because the fitment was it was really tight. So everything like went together well, but in order for it to move freely and like real smooth, there was a lot of sanding involved and polishing of the main barrel. And that was, man, that took like 3 months.
Yeah,
but it was like worth
back
it.
And forth. Yeah,
it was worth it though, man. It was all aluminum, hand cut.
Do you still have that today?
I do. Yes, it's the same pack that I've had for the last 6 years.
That's awesome. So do you just kind of build on that, or are you at a period where you're just kind of like, all right, I'm good. I'm happy with the way it is.
You know what I do? It sits out in my garage, which is my workshop. And what I'll do is I look at it, and it'll go for months and months and months. It collects dust, so much dust. So I'll go out there with like a paintbrush, and just kind of dust it off, and then, you know, I'll like rub something on it to kind of wear the paint. That I don't really do much to it anymore. It's at a point where it's finished. But yeah, I don't wear it enough, so I still have to sit there and give it its yearly weathering where it would need it.
So let me
what I was doing with mine. I was letting it collect dust. I was letting it collect dust, and then at one point I was weathering it and sending pictures to Corey, and he was like, "Ah, that looks like you dragged it through the sewer." So then I had to like,
yes, it was
take
awesome.
It all down, and like then I like polished it back up, and he's like, "Oh, that looks too new." So I was like trying all kinds of different weathering techniques and stuff.
But, yeah, that's natural weathering right there, the dust around the shop. I mean, you can't...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the spray paint and mold release.
A little asbestos here and there. It's all good.
I hope not.
So what was the first, this is annoying, someone needs to fix this moment that led you guys into making parts?
That's I guess that's my question to answer. The very first thing that I offered to the general public on my Facebook page was the smoke bomb. The smoker bomb. It was the very first vent kit design that I had made because I'm not going to go into giving anybody names or go into detail on anything that I answered throughout this segment. So it was another builder. I bought it, put it into my pack. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then, you know, it starts smelling burnt. And I'm like, what's going on? So I open up the pack, and then, you know, I'm like testing everything out, and I'm watching it, and it's like turning orange. And I'm like, that can't be right. There's something going on here. And the liquid was real runny. And the way it was put together, the actual kit itself, it wasn't pleasing to the eye. It just did not look good to me. And that was my first indication that I need to do something to offer people something of a better quality that works better as well. And that's when I just started researching on, because, you know, all the smoke kits that are out there, they're all e-cigs. That's what they are. There's no beating around the bush. You have foggers and this, that, and the other, but they all run on some type of you could use baby oil, honestly, which is, it's really bad for you. That's what people use to smoke test engines in the automotive field to, you know, find a boost leak somewhere or a vacuum leak. And it's real. I can't really describe it. But people have used that in fog machines. It's not good. There's you could damage your lungs breathing that stuff, especially like at a convention. If you're going to like let off a smoke kit and you got like baby oil coming out of it and it's all vaporized and you're breathing that stuff, that is not good.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing was to make a kit that was available to everybody that also was like environmentally friendly. You know, the chemicals that we use in the juices that I mean, I make my own juice, so I buy all the supplies to do it, and it's all organic. So everything that I make is liquid wise, it's all organic. I use organic everything. So it's user friendly.
So basically that's kind of how you started to see it. CNS prop shop.
Yes. Was building the very first smoke kit to make sure that, you know, it was working properly. It was pleasing to the eye and it wasn't toxic. So,
and then you reached out to me and you were like, I need a logo to look legit. And then I sort of came on as your marketing guy.
Yeah. And it's worked out pretty good. All of the logos, everything you see is done by Andrew.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So then after a while, after CS Prop Shop, you were like, we got to come up with other stuff, right? So I basically, I saw a need for ribbon cables in the market, because at the time there's only really one real name in the industry that everyone knows.
He was having
personal issues and people were trying to get ribbons, and so we kind of talked about it, and I was like, we should offer ribbons because people are looking for them. And so I talked to Corey, we worked it out, we figured out wiring and how to do it, and then I started coming up with ribbon cables, and next thing I know, I'm doing ribbons in my house. So then Corey was like, well, we should change this from CNS Prop Shop to something else. It's both of us. So then that's when we came up with the name CNA Prop Design, that kind of brought both of us into the mix, and that's how we started working together, basically.
Nice. So the ribbon cables brought you together, and the smoke kit brought it all up.
Exactly.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Well, after I started making the smoker bombs, which, I mean, it literally, they were all hand-built. This was before, like, 3D printing, and people were, you know, nowadays everybody has a 3D printer. Yeah. Everybody that's a builder has a 3D printer. Back then, it wasn't like that, and you only had, like, a few prop builders who were printing stuff, so I was building these things out of like PVC with PVC caps and like using grinders, like hand grinders and Dremel and grinding like the fans down to stick them inside the tube. I mean, it looked good. I liked the way it worked. And there's still people that are still using those kits today. They have not failed.
In my pack.
Yeah, I spray painted them like this neon green color.
my pack, I recently sold my pack, but it was in there for 6 years, still working.
Yeah. And,
it looked like a pipe bomb. It was great.
Yeah, that's the reason why it looked like a smoke bomb. That was the whole point. Like, I had to name it something, and that's the only thing I came up with. And then I was like, you know what, I'm going to offer something else. I started making Spangler plates and sourcing like the plugs and making sure that all the little the washers that went around the jacks looked, you know, authentic, and those were fun to do and short-lived, but there were other people making them. Once, you know, those are probably one of the easiest things that you can make when it goes to putting stuff onto a pack is the Spangler plate, because you can make it however you want. There's multiple designs.
Yeah, but those were good too, and they look legit awesome.
Yeah, they were fun. Those were fun to make.
And for people who don't know, those plates, are you referring to the charging plates?
Yeah, the charge port plate underneath the bottom half of the pack on the backside. And there was, how many different versions? There were three different versions, correct?
Yeah, there's a Pikmin one, and a Hero one, and I think a Spangler one.
So they weren't on all the packs.
They were on every single pack, but they just had a different tweak to them to make it its own. Because they kind of threw them together so that, you know, you can turn the switches on and off and make everything, you know, it functioned. There was a purpose for it. And it wasn't necessarily part of, you know, the movie. It wasn't integrated into the movie because they actually used it to, like, charge the battery in the pack so that they had lights and their flashbulb was working properly. Because I don't know if you know this, but the flashbulbs were actually a trigger point for them to put the CGI onto the tip of the gun for the proton stream. So, you know, you had to make sure that you had plenty of power for that to discharge that flashbulb.
Yeah.
And there was that plate underneath where they charged it. I'm not sure, like, I don't think anybody has ever seen any of the charging equipment for the packs ever. I've never seen any.
I've never seen any, but that Spangler plate is the hookup for where they actually charge, like, the batteries inside of it for the prop.
Right.
And I think the community named the place based off of which packs they were found on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, but that, you know, that's just so interesting because you get to looking at that and then you don't notice it in the movie, but then when you start to look and you get into the details and see where these packs were on display, I think is that that's when a lot of people were like, what the hell is that? I don't remember seeing that. And
there was a guy who did a YouTube video and he did, like, it was an auction. It was for an auction for the, I think, Spangler Ghostbusters 2-pack. And he was showing it off, and he pretty much goes around the whole thing so you can get a general idea of what was all on those packs, you know, during, you know, when they were shooting the film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can go crazy looking at every pack. I mean, every pack since it was, like, thrown together at, you know, at the last hour when everyone's, you know, in a drug-fueled daze trying to get this stuff done for the movies last minute. Everything has its own nicks and cuts and breakages in it. And, you know, each pack is different. So there are people who hone in on those and try to make that exact pack. Like, we have a buddy who made an exact Egon Spangler pack and got every nook and cranny down just right, you know, every scratch and every nail hole, everything in it. And it's like, that's amazing. It's a lot of detail and time to get that stuff right, you know?
Yeah, that's a lot of some people are like, oh, well, that might be some overthinking in that. No, I think that's what you got to have to do when it comes to getting those things right, because there are so many little minute details that people take for granted, right? Like the nail mark, I think, is in one of the castings up at the top, right near the crank gen, if I remember correctly, the top left corner, maybe.
I think it's those ribs they have around.
Yeah,
the ribs they have around the crank gen.
Yep.
They started as wooden, like little wooden planks, and they nailed them into the buck. So when they fiberglassed it, they got those details, and then when they resined it, the resin picked up all the details. But yeah, some people I don't know what it is about the Ghostbusters community in general, but they go over everything with a
obsessive compulsive, man. That's we're all one. Yeah.
I mean, I started out that way, but you can really drive yourself crazy with this stuff.
We drive each other crazy. How many times have our other prop builder guy, Eduardo?
Yeah.
He's dragging everybody into it. Sorry, Eduardo. I know you're going to listen to this, but we drag each other. He goes down a wormhole, and I'm like, dude, you know, hand to the forehead.
I gotta tell you, though, he is great for any kind of information you need. He will go down the route. Right now, he is on the bookstore. The occult bookstore. He's trying to get every single book from the.
I'm sure everyone's seen it too. Everyone sees what he posts.
So I was gonna say, I feel like I've seen him, especially on like the Ghostbusters Fans Worldwide page on Facebook. I feel like he's posted in that, and I remember him showing off his library of what he had, and some of those books. You wouldn't have thought that, you know, all of those were real, but they were, and it looks like he's kind of jumped in on that. So I need to get with him and go through his library and get some myself.
There you go. A lot of people have started doing that, looking for just, you know, pausing the scene and looking in the background. What can I find at Goodwill? You know, where's that at?
Yeah.
eBay.
Keeping eBay 20 busy.
Bucks on eBay.
Yep.
Yeah.
He had me blow a day of work trying to go down a rabbit hole with him, trying to look for covers and stuff, man. it gets obsessive, I'm telling you. And then he's like, no, it's this. And then I'm like, no, it's this. And then we go back and forth for hours and hours. It's crazy.
So when you guys see a pack, speaking of obsessive, are you seeing a finished product or do you see a list of problems to solve?
I am always looking at a list of problems to solve. Andrew, I know you agree with me.
I definitely am. I'm always looking for a problem to solve. Definitely.
What is that?
I think what it is when people look at it that way, it's not necessarily them looking for a way to fix somebody else's pack. It's them looking at a pack and saying, what would I do to make that pack mine? It's not necessarily your pack's a piece of junk. It's what can I do? If that were my pack, what would I do to it to change it up and make it more of my pack?
It's like when I looked at mine, I was always like, okay, that's cool, but like, what can I do to make it cooler? And then like eventually got to a point where like, what can I do to make it cooler, but also still make it look like it was out of the movie? And that would be like adding a smoker kit to something, or like adding
right.
one of your smoker kits to like a booster tube or something like that.
Or the gray elbows. I was on a gray elbow binge for a while there. I was able to find some retro fittings and, you know, work my magic to put them together, and they sold like hotcakes. I guess everybody loved them. I tried to make them as close, as accurate as I possibly could with what I had to work with, and I think they turned out pretty good. I don't even have any of them on my own pack. I sold them to everybody else because everybody else needed them.
I still need some. You sold mine too.
Okay. We'll make some more. I've got a parts box that's stacked away that's got a whole pile of them. So once we can get the fittings and I'll be able to throw some more up there for everyone.
That's just those little nuances, right? So it's like those darker gray ones were, that was from the first movie, is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, and then in GB2 is when you notice that they were more of that light gray, which I think is the ones that you can easily get now.
Right, yep.
So how did what was the process in that? Did you just have to paint them?
What I ended up doing is I designed them in CAD from the ground up, and then I had to figure out if I wanted to actually mold them or 3D print them in resin. Whichever would have been more efficient with the best detail is what I went for. Cost effective was 3D printing them and then adding the inserts and tapping it for the fitting, the brass fitting, and then using like high gloss, what was it? I can't remember. I used it all.
Wasn't it?
If I saw a picture of it, I'd be able to figure out exactly what it was. But I sprayed them like 3 times to give it that nice, like polished plastic look, like it would if it were to, you know, be an actual new part.
Yeah.
So, and you can dull them down. Like everything that we offer, I try to make it look as new as possible, because it's up to the consumer if they want it to look dirty and weathered. That could be on them.
Yeah.
So the only weathering that I offer is for the elbow pads, for the jumpsuit, and for the belt as just a general suit weathering. And then, not a lot of people know that we do that, but it's just like something that I offer if somebody wants their suit done up to match their props.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of the work that you guys do, it sits behind the scenes. So why do you think the most important parts of a build are the least talked about?
Go ahead, Andrew.
In terms of, what do you mean, like the smoker kits or like what?
Yeah, the stuff that you, okay, so for instance, the elbows, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't really look at those, but they are something that, you know, it's that little detail that people may overlook or may not pay too much attention to. For instance, that probably wasn't something that many people thought, oh, wait, that it was a darker gray in GV1? Okay. You know, just like little things like that.
Oh, being obsessed with screen accuracy.
Yeah.
Any prop builder is obsessed with screen accuracy and making sure that the color is correct.
What I find though from the community is that especially newcomers is they want to make the pack, right? So they start off with like all the big stuff, making sure like all the big stuff, all the major stuff is there, not necessarily focusing on the nuances. But then as soon as they have their packs together and they go to like their first meetup or their first like team meeting, they start talking about all their little, you know, the nuances, like the elbows and like the brackets and stuff like that. And everybody wants to make their pack closer and closer to screen accurate. So then people start changing out parts. You know, that's what I found like for the Hasbro packs, for instance, because I make the ribbon for the Hasbro packs as well as the clip that that holds on to the Hasbro pack, because I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one, but if you squeeze like the screws on the clamp, it pops off and it works with a sound effect. So I fully designed a clamp that works in conjunction with the ribbon cable that's a screen accurate size that you can swap out your Hasbro factory one for ours. And I find a lot of people, they get the pack and they wear it around and they love it, but then they want to start switching out parts. And that's like one of the first thing they switch out is they want the cable with the clamp. So it's kind of like a big to small, if that makes sense. They want to get everything big first and then they want to go small and get all the minute pieces.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did the same thing. I think you do the same thing as well.
Yeah, I did. Absolutely. I started with that throwing chicken wand from off Etsy, and I had all the original pieces on it, and it looked great. But then I started switching out all the knobs for all the GB fans stainless steel pieces, and it just made the wand it made it pop so much more, and it was so cool. It actually felt like a prop after that.
Right. It switching out a plastic piece for a metal piece makes a huge difference because plastic doesn't shine. And when you get your thrower in a certain light aspect and you're moving around and everything looks, you know, like, man, this thing looks like it could actually do something because the weight, the look, the shine of the real metal, it all plays a factor. So like from a little hat light to like a scratch somewhere on the pack, people are, if somebody offered a service to scratch up a pack, I'm sure there would be a market for it. I mean, you know, within reason, not like Freddy Krueger the whole thing, but
but there would be people, you know, knocking down the door, I think.
Right. I mean, to an extent, you're always going to have somebody that thinks the same way that you do. So you'll have a group of people that will, you know, if you were to offer a service based on something that you like or you do to your own pack or prop in general, I think you'll have a little bit of a market for that specific area, you know?
Well, those are the things that the weathering service that we offer, I love it. I mean, I get into that. I start scratching up pieces and like throwing paint on stuff and like taking.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I get it. I get that art juice flowing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Turning it into a Picasso.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's like, how often do you get to like have fun and like get stuff dirty and like just get it grungy and like.
On purpose, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually just finished a 89 pack, and I was going to try to, and I don't know, I still might, you know, turn it in. It was the 3D printed pack, and I was thinking, well, maybe I could wear this one in conjunction with a GB2 suit at the convention, and then maybe the next day swap it up with GB1 or whatever. But the weathering part was an important factor in how I built this pack and you know, just really the finishing touches on it, because I too wanted to kind of do that. I took some of the Vallejo pigment, and that stuff is awesome. You know, you get some of that, you put it can go far, so a little goes a long way. I found that out the hard way. But yeah, you just get on there, just start spreading it around, and it just gives it that whole different feel, that different vibe. And I think when you look at, you know, between the first one and the second one, it's 5 years, right? So yeah, the pack's maybe been sitting around for a while, but it is. I think if you try to weather something yourself, but then maybe have another set of eyes on it, it comes out a completely different way, and it is a lot of fun doing that.
100%. We're always sending pictures back and forth, like, how does this look? How does this look? We haven't done it in a while, but when we were, like, really into making sure our packs were proper, we were sending pictures back and forth, like, referencing certain things. And he's like, how did you get this like this? And I'm like, I don't know. How did you do that? And he's like, oh, well, here, I'll show you. That's a good thing about having a partnership, is bouncing ideas off of each other, because if it were just me, there's no way I would be where I am today. So I have to thank Andrew for, you know, sticking with me this whole time. And we still have a lot of stuff to do this year.
That's awesome.
Same here. That's the best part of a partnership, like you said, is bouncing ideas off of each other. So,
yep.
So how do you guys decide when something is good enough versus worth redesigning it completely?
We
reach out to another builder and be like, hey, what do you think of this?
No, honestly, our stuff always gets tweaked, though. There's always, like, another version, because we're always thinking of, like, different ways of doing things, and, like, either sleeker or more modern, or, you know, just in our
more mind, accurate.
More accurate. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just remolded my leg hose connector just because I mean, I like the V2 design, don't get me wrong, but the second mold that I did, I made three of them because it's that much better. And it's, you know what, just, I'll send you one. You can let me know for yourself what you think about it. I'll send you one of each so you can compare them, and you can let me know what you think of them.
Yeah, so with those, and that's one thing too I noticed that you guys do. You make the leg hose connectors. You even supply the hose, I think, in those kits too, right?
Oh yeah,
it's the whole thing.
We usually sell. I mean, we'll sell whatever somebody needs. If they just need the connector for the belts for their hose, you know, we'll sell them that or the whole kit, whatever anybody needs.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, are those, when you say molded, dude, that are you trying to keep to the movie where they were rubber?
Oh yeah, they're polyurethane.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
They move with the suit, they contour to your leg. They're like legit. They're awesome.
I actually had some requests. You actually had them on your show, Matt Baker.
Yeah.
He hit me up and he wanted certain colors for his outfit before he went to one of these major cons that he was traveling to. So I made sure that, you know, I sent him pictures and he thought they were awesome. So I had enough of each batch to do one extra. So I ended up with like a pink, a purple, a couple yellow. I just had like a rainbow of different colors. And I've recently had people like, hey, do you still have this one? Hey, do you still have this one? Like every couple weeks, somebody's hitting me up for a different color. So I think the leg hose connector is kind of a hit to people who kind of go outside of the box when it comes to their uniforms, not going directly for screen accuracy, but more for their personality and how they want to dress.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that is something important. And I think what you guys were able to bring to the table, especially with that, and I think Matt is a good example of this as well, is it's okay to be yourself, you know? And I think to a point, there are a lot of people in this hobby who do want to stick with screen accuracy, right? That's the thing. That's with any movie, right? That's people who get into it. There is a certain number of them who want to stick with that. But it's also okay to think outside the box. And I think that what you guys were able to provide in that sense, it looked great. I thought the colors came out amazing. How long did it take you guys to do that?
Honestly, it's literally right there on the spot. Somebody tells me what color they're after and I'll sit there and, you know, tinker with the color and get it right before I pour the part B and mix my rubber up. I'll get the color right and it just happens on the spot.
That's incredible. No, I love that. So, you know, talking about what you guys offer, you deal a lot with, you know, the venting and smoke systems. What separates a gimmick from something that actually adds to the experience?
I would say that the kit, if you're talking smoke kit or vent kit, it has to operate as though it's, you know, doing what the pack sounds like it's doing. So, you know, you hear that venting surge, that
Yeah.
You want that to look like it's got pressure behind it. You know, it's supposed to look like it's purging out of the holes or wherever, you know, the vent kit is, because I make them for the booster tube and, you know, on commission for the throwers. And so it has to kind of represent the sound that you're hearing as well. So, for example, I mean, there's a lot of people who make their own smoke kits, and some of them work phenomenal. Others look like they got it to work and they were happy with it, and it just kind of falls out of the area that it's supposed to like purge from. It just kind of oozes out.
Oh yeah.
And to me, that the sound doesn't match that. So having the authenticity of like a purging look, like it's actually blowing out of the pack, you know, the hot steamy air is coming out of the pack with the sound that properly, you know, mates up with it.
Right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. When you hear that sound, that's what you should experience, is that smoke having that pressure behind it. And I think that is kind of where people maybe get into a little bit of a loss, is, you know, how do you time those things perfectly in sync with audio? And that's a challenge, right? You guys have to weigh a lot of that into the decision making when you're making these props, I imagine.
Right. And the most recent vent kit that we have come together on was the HasLab vent kit. And we designed that with a removable cap. The cap resembles the afterlife when Phoebe takes the cyclotron off, and you can see where the end filter is at, and you see that little cone shape. We integrated that into the HasLab kit so that it has some back pressure to it.
Oh,
because
cool.
The fan is designed to spin faster than what you would normally see on somebody else's pack. You know, even in my own personal pack, I have just a regular vent kit in there. The fan's only going so fast, but I set it up to where the fan has it's a high speed fan. So the back pressure inside that casing pushes up against the inside of that cone, and it creates pressure. So it actually does purge out, because there's back pressure inside of that tunnel, that fan tunnel. So when it hits the backside of the end filter, it disperses outward evenly. And that's why you get even amount of smoke on each of those holes. And it looks like it's coming out, you know, with a little bit of pressure behind it. Now, if you have the cyclotron off and the kit activates, it blows it out like a fire hose. It's insane.
Yeah, I think that one was a work of art. That one.
Yeah, that
you created the volcano.
I can't even remember how long it took us to come up with that setup, but I didn't want to change it after I saw how it worked. I'm like, we have to leave it like this.
Yeah, that was amazing. And that one, like you said, that works with the cyclotron on, and it works with the cyclotron off, and it gives you two different effects, which is
right.
Incredible. So
that's cool.
It's all in the design. I'm sorry to cut you off, but when we think about on a pack, okay, well, this pack is going to have this type of end filter, and oh, it's got a removable this, or, you know, we kind of look at it from a builder's perspective and say, how can we make this better and do something that it wasn't meant to do?
Right.
Yeah, that one, the HasLab smoker, we went back and forth several times, because you were like, it's not going to work this way. And I'm like, it has to work this way. It has to look screen accurate. That's the first thing that we always talk about, is if it's not screen accurate enough, people are not going to be invested in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it has to look screen accurate, and then we have to figure out how it's going to work. And Corey's the genius behind that. He always figures out how to friggin' create the back pressure, and how the magnets work to make the electricity go through it, and the light works when the cap's on, but you can remove the cap to fill the thing. It's an engineering masterpiece. It really is. It's out of control.
No,
they take forever to build.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. I mean, and I think my end goal is to have, I've got a smoke kit, but I do not have the booster tube kit. And just how cool that would be to have those going off simultaneously. That's what I got to add in next. I think is on my list. Now
he does a triple, you know, Charlie. He does one with the gun also. He's got one.
No way. How do you have room in that?
Matt Baker bought my first iteration of that. Yes, he did.
Oh my God, dude. Where do you put it? Like I'm confused.
There's a way. There's always a way.
Where there's a will.
There's always the way. There is. There's always room in a proton pack to put something more.
Yeah. So, you know, what did Venkman say? There's always room for Jello. You know, you got to have a little bit of fun with that.
There's always room for smoke kits.
Exactly. So, and with that being said, you know, what is the one thing that when people want to add smoke or effects to their pack, what is the one thing that ends up biting them later that they don't think about?
Never cross your positive and your ground.
Don't cross the streams.
I think the first one that we should get out is you always need that board. What's that board called? The oh my God, it's escaping me right now.
The relay board?
The relay board, yeah.
Everybody some of these guys are now they're releasing their it's already integrated into their setups. So
is it?
Okay. Some of them are. So but you know, I do. Yeah, we do have to let people know if you have this kit, you have to have a relay board, and we can, you know, we point them in a direction on where to obtain one if they don't have one, or how to make it themselves if a builder does not offer one. So, yeah, making sure that they got a relay for it would be number one. Number two, even though I said not to cross the wires, you never want to cross your wires. But I have been making my kits to where if you do, it won't mess up the smoke kit. I've added some fail-safe inside of the electronics box. So just in the off chance that somebody does hook up the positive and negative backwards, it's not going to affect the kit. So they're safe on that.
That was my biggest fear when I installed mine was do not cross them. I kept telling myself that. I think I put about 8 wraps of red electrical tape around my positive just to, it was freaking me out.
Yeah, so there's no worry there. I started, in the last couple years, I was doing it a different way. And a lot of people did have some issues, but I did correct them. I always say that if you have a problem with your kit and you don't know how to fix it, send it back to me. And I will fix it. I have everything here to fix those kits, and it's all sitting right in front of me. So, and it doesn't cost me anything but time to sit down and open up a kit and figure out what's wrong with it and do some repairs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we fix everything. We stand by everything that we sell. You just have to ship it back to us, and we'll fix it and send it out within reason. If you're opening it up and smashing it with a hammer, I mean.
Yeah. Void.
Yeah. You might get wind of that, when you pick it up and it rattles from the post office.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what is this? The box is still straight.
Yeah, something's up with this. What's going on? So what has been the hardest thing to make consistent across different builds and platforms?
Oh, man. Go ahead, Andrew.
I mean,
the ribbon cables have been kind of a headache for us when he first started out sourcing some of the stuff.
Yeah, they were a super headache. When we first started ribbon cables, we were using one material that I swear it worked great. Like, it worked great for 2 weeks. And then when it sat around, it like completely unraveled. And we were scratching our head being like, what is going on here? Because everything, our cables are handmade, so everything is stretched tight, and then we have a process where we use a clear laminating film, and then everything is rolled out with, machinery and stuff, and then I don't know what it was, just this material that we bought was not working, and it kept coming undone. And we seriously went through, I think, almost a year and a half of trying different types of sheathing materials until I finally got one that was like a high-end commercial grade, very expensive material that finally worked. And the cool thing about it is now that we have this new process in place, it's super flexible. Like the cable is really flexible to where you can do like all these tight twists from the 84 movie, or you can twist it real tight to like the Omni cover. And it doesn't crack or break like other manufacturers on the market. So we kind of cornered that gimmick, if you will. Like we have like a really good rubbery twist with our cable.
And you can reshape it with heat.
Yeah. You can also, if you don't like the twist, you just roll it out and you reheat it and everything goes pretty much straight again and you can try a different twist. But
so they can do that. The user can do that without having to worry about it, you know, messing it up or making the shrink do weird things.
Exactly, because it's not shrink. It's a different type of material. I forgot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a commercial polymer that I can't remember right now because I just order it. So whenever it comes in, it comes in.
Yeah.
But it can be. It can be twisted and reheated and reshaped. It's pretty good. So we've been using that now. But to keep it consistent and clean is like, it's such a hassle. Look, I gotta tell you, ribbon cables are just like, it's like a hand workout and like a workout and like how to keep the steps in order so you don't screw them up. Because once you screw up one part, the whole thing is garbage. So,
see, and I think it's easy to say that is probably, at least from what I've seen, correct me, but it seems like that's one of the most popular requests on the market, is people want that GB1 ribbon cable, and you just cannot find it from someplace. But a lot of work goes into those, because I don't believe anything that I've ever read or seen that those were mass-produced. They were made specifically for the movie. Is that right?
I don't even think they were made for the movie. I think they got some sort of aircraft computer or something like that and ripped the cable out of that, you know, whatever that computer was, that 1940s Air Force, whatever. And once it ran out, the technology changed and that cable is gone. Because it's a 16-pin cable or something like that?
Yeah, and the design of the cable, the original design from 1983 when they made them,
yeah,
that's like, that was nothing that people were just coming up with on a whim.
Yeah.
That had to be something that was used, and then it's completely gone now. No one uses it, and it will never be found.
Yeah, because I think a lot of that stuff was used from Apex Surplus over in L.A.
I believe you're right, yeah.
Which,
that big warehouse with all the aircraft.
The aircraft parts from back in the day. So, yeah, that makes sense. It was probably yanked from a, you know, old computer at the time. And you know, the rest is history. But just how incredible is it to find, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 of those for, you know, various packs? You know, it's.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen cables that come close. But either some of the stripes are missing or it's not fully 16. And they'll just never be a found cable ever. It's just too far gone, I think, at this point.
And it's a
specified field, you know?
Just so, like the Legris elbows.
Yeah, exactly. All those
are like
things.
Almost impossible to find anymore.
Yeah.
All the fittings.
Well, they crack. All those elbows just cracked and disintegrated because of the plastic.
Yep.
So, but as you said, yes, now they're made for the movie. Now thankfully there's other people, you know, in the community that can make them. So, and we're happy to be one of those prop designers that can provide that service.
Yeah, because there are people out there that don't realize the work that goes into them. You're talking about being it's a handcrafted piece, right? You also have to make a custom jig, I think, from what I've seen, right? to help you out.
I think I'm on my third one. I make mine out of wood, and I try to keep them, in a clean environment, and now mine's like made out of 2x4s and stuff, just so it can take all the pressure of the twisting and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're basically like pulling. It's like it's pulling wire, basically. That's the hard.
Like guitar string.
Exactly. Yeah, but you're manually pulling it. There's no like crank or wheel or anything to do it for you, because it wouldn't make sense.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome though that you guys provide that, because they, like I said, it's one of the most popular parts easily, I think, that people out there they look for. And how often do you guys do them? Do you do certain runs at certain periods of time, or is it just based on demand, or what is it?
I think we go through ebbs and flows. Sometimes we do like pre-orders for our stuff. And then sometimes we'll take requests. It all depends on the seasons, really. I noticed, during the summer, a lot of people gear up because they want to get their stuff ready for Halloween. So they start building through the summer. But then after Halloween, a lot of stuff drops.
Yeah.
So right now, I would say we're starting to pick up. I think smoke kits are definitely going to be in demand. Ribbon cables are going to be in demand, and then certainly after like a big, a movie gets out there, or even a Ghostbusters cartoon, then we start to pick up a lot more. We get more requests, so then we'll talk about it, and then we'll run like a pre-order on whatever we think people will need.
What is the one small upgrade that has a bigger impact than people expect?
That's a hard one. That is a hard one, because there's a lot. There's already a lot of stuff, but the one thing.
Yeah, I think certainly when people go looking for a smoke kit, is the one thing they want to add to their pack that like pops it. Like after doing all their fine detailing and stuff and adding pieces they want an effect to really bring it to life, because the lights and sound, they bring it so far.
Right.
But then you get the smoke action going, and that's like, that's like, wow, that's like a 4D thing, That's like sight and sound and feel and smell. Because Corey also adds toasted marshmallow to it, so you get that smell.
That was going to be my next question. Do you add the marshmallow? Are people going to smell that?
You want to know what I use instead of like adding an artificial, because I told you all my stuff is organic. I use vanilla bean in my liquid and it steeps.
Oh, okay. And that
so
gives you that smell.
The only thing that gives you a burnt marshmallow is a burning vanilla, because that's what marshmallows are flavored with, is vanilla extract.
Man, I need to go pop a bag of marshmallows right now. This has got me wanting some. So, you're right. I have to agree with you on that, because seeing when I put in my kit, I remember showing my cousin for the first time, and just the smile that he had was just like, oh shit, that's cool. It's just that excitement being at the cons, right? And even though they say, don't put off your smoke kits, whatever, I'm gonna do it anyway, probably, in a decent area. I'm not gonna roast people out with marshmallow, but people, they get that smile, and it's that whole effect that when they hear the sounds and the lights, and then they smell the marshmallow coming from the smoke, it's just the coolest thing.
The trap smoke kit works the same way. Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. You guys do that as well. Is that specific for only certain traps, or how do you guys have that?
Well, I'll give you a short background on the trap smoke kits. We've been talking about, what if Hasbro did the ghost trap next? And we were already trying to brainstorm something for that. But before that even was a thing, Andrew had sent me, what was it? What was that? Was that a Walmart?
No, Spirit. It was the one they used in the, was it a Walmart trap or Spirit?
Yeah, it was a Walmart trap because they had to go clear the shelves.
Yeah. Walmart trap. That's right.
So he sends me his Walmart trap, and he's like, I want you to deck. Well, I told him to send it to me. I was like, just send it to me, and I'll put it together for you. So he sent me his trap, a bag full of parts. So it went from looking like this $25 toy to a $400 movie replica. I added wheels to it. I did all this stuff to it. It
awesome.
Looks – do you still have it?
Of course I still have it.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, then it looks the part, and it functions. I even made the Foster connectors had contact pins inside of them so that you can disengage it from the trap and the pedal and wind it up and put it on your belt. And you could hook it back up, and then the trap pedal would still activate the trap itself.
You kind of did the Charles Worth hose thing.
Yeah.
You turned the pneumatic hose into the electronic port. But you did it better because it still works. And I cannot believe it still works. Like, I can plug it and unplug it. It's pretty awesome.
There's two 18650 batteries that run the smoke kit that's inside of it. And there's two, what are they? 40 millimeter fans on a whole 3D printed bracket setup that I added inside of it as well. So it all runs off of the stock electronics and triggers the smoke kit to operate at the same time.
That is incredible. Works.
It's still charged.
So after that, then we started talking about, okay, well, maybe people would be interested in trap smoke kits. And I'm like, man, that's going to get expensive because just the batteries alone, you know, I would have to sell the kits without batteries. And
yeah, but then you got sidetracked by the Seiko.
Yeah.
So then we do the replica Seiko watches also.
I saw Corey, that. Those look awesome.
Yeah, Corey designed the heads, the watch faces from scratch. And then I did all the graphics on the watch, and then he did the what'd you do? The band? You molded the band.
Yeah, I mold the bands.
Yeah. He molds the bands, he molds the clasps. I mean, like, you molded everything on the watch. I mean, it's insane.
Now, are they like meant to be worn or is it are they
Oh meant, yeah. They're really? Meant to be worn, man.
That is sick. So it's not just a display piece, it's a wearable functional piece.
Oh yeah. Well, I offer two different designs. I keep saying I. This is a us thing. Two different designs. Basically, I mean it is the same design, but with two different display inserts. Because you know some people don't want to spend the money to have the watch insert. It's a Casio calculator watch that goes inside of it, so it actually shows a display. And I offer like a dummy insert so that they're a little bit on the cheaper side and people can, if they choose to, spend the extra $30 later on, they could buy the watch themselves and swap it out. So
that's cool. Yeah, I love that. There's so many different people out there who have different ideas and different mindsets when it comes to some of that. Some people just want a display piece. Some people want to wear it out when they're trooping around with their stuff. You know, that's the cool thing about, offering both sides of that is you're fulfilling both of those niches. That's awesome.
Well, the reason why I made it was because it's one of those props that nobody was really doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? There was one other company, I don't remember their name. Yes, I do, but I'm not going to say it. Okay. There was one other company that was doing it. And I'm like, that looks good, but I can make it better. I'm always trying to make something better. Better my own designs, better... I'm getting twisted up here.
No, this is like
just better all around, like something that is affordable and still looks as close as it can get. And that's what we kind of tried to do. I mean,
that's our whole mindset. It's to make quality stuff that's not out there and make stuff that's like better. And that's kind of why we keep improving our designs also. Like I think we're up to version 10 of the smoke kit. And, I'm up to version, core of the ribbon cable, because we just keep finding better materials and better ways to do things. So it just, we improve every year and try to make it better.
So when you see someone's build, maybe you're out at a convention, maybe Halloween, what instantly tells you that they know what they're doing?
The weathering of the pack and the use of certain parts. Like if you're a Ghostbusters fan and you know the props, you engage on certain aspects already. And if it's what you're looking for, then you know they're in the same realm.
Nice.
Yeah, I try not to, like, I don't know. I try not to. I feel like this a bit elitist because I don't like to go out there and, like, start ripping someone's pack apart.
Yeah. Nobody but, like, does that outburst. They do it in their head, man.
Yeah, but like, as long as you're out there and you have your gear on and you're trooping and you're, like, in the Ghostbuster spirit, like, I think that's awesome. But as far as, like, know what you're doing, exactly what Corey said. Like, the weathering's got to be on point. And, like, I can tell I know what you're doing if, like, you have 3D printed props that are, like, sanded and, like, you know, you took the flashing off and, like, you spent a little time with it and, like, you know, filled those gaps and, like, primed it and painted it and it looks good. And, you know, I think that's cool. Like, when you're in it and you have something that you built with your own hands and you got it to look, like, amazing, I think that's awesome. Because, you know, my second pack was scratch built. I had, my cyclotron was a cake pan. Nobody could tell it was a cake pan because I, like, worked it and, like, did all this stuff to it. And everybody,
mine was too.
Yeah, right. And as soon as
everybody had a cake pan, man.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, if you did it right, you could not tell. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's part of being an artist too, I guess. Like, if you're really good at, you know, doing your art or like being creative, you will hide all that stuff and it will look like a movie prop. It'll look amazing. Doesn't matter what you build out of.
Yep. As long as the weathering's on point, you can make anything look good.
Yeah, exactly.
So if somebody wanted to start solving their own pack build problems instead of buying parts, what's the first thing that they should learn?
How to do it the cheapest way.
Yeah.
Don't go broke.
Yeah. Don't go broke.
A common theme here on the show.
Yep. Yep. Don't go broke.
You don't need to go broke. A lot of these are simple shapes. You can find them all around the house. You just have to know how to bondo and glue and hide seams and paint and do all that stuff. You know, you don't have to go broke.
3D printers are among us all over the place now. And, you know, people can start doing their own stuff if they want.
Yeah, buy a $200 3D printer and you buy like $200 in plastic and you can print your whole pack. All you do.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did. That was my first pack ever. Well,
there you go.
Thinking about when I was a kid, you know, that was probably my real Ghostbusters pack. But now that I think about it, I think I stole that from the kid down the street. But I'm not going to get into that. I think what was really cool is having a 3D printer, like you said, and being able to make something that is just badass. Because you're right. Yeah, if you got a 3D printer, even, you know, you may not be able to make a whole pack with, say, a Bamboo Lab A1 Mini, but you can get a lot of the Greeblies. That's a good place to start, you know, if you already have something. And, you know, and that's the other thing, too. We're so lucky this day and age to be able to have resources like YouTube and GB fans and Reddit and all these different places that we can go, these Facebook groups, you guys being able to put yourselves out there and help other people. And it's just, we're so lucky that we do. We have these different aspects of building that you can kind of take from. And, you know, like you mentioned, the cake pan. I think there's a guy on YouTube I found who has made a complete pack out of, I think it was like a rubber floor mat or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
There's just so many different things that you can do. Looking at you, what you guys offer in your portfolio, what else is to come? What can people expect?
Oh, take that one.
I'm on it, man. Well, Max Factory had reached out and shown us his new design for his infilter and said, can you make a smoke kit fit this?
And I'm looking at this and I'm like, I would have to have the parts here in order for me to even say yes or no. So he sent me one of the in filters, which, I mean, he's already released it, so it's no secret now. So
yeah.
He sent me the in filter so I can start taking measurements, and that's what we're in the middle of doing right now, is designing a smoke kit for the Max Factory Proton Pack shell and in filter with removable end cap.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that thing is immaculate.
And it should be a pretty user-friendly design. It's going to be something different than what everybody's used to. There's going to be some brackets. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice. No, that's all good. So, and we got to give props where props are due, no pun intended. But, you know, you've got Max Factory out there making all these fantastic top-tier aluminum pieces for Proton Packs and, you know, for their pack specifically. I mean, yeah, he's doing a great job and just loving what he's putting out there. And to be able to see that you guys are working with him on doing something like that to make it a cohesive piece, that's awesome. I think that just gives people something to look forward to.
Right. I figured it was time that we designed the smoke kit for the Max Factory shell. So
yeah,
what better time than him to ask if we're able to do it? And we're just like, yeah, we'll do it. And it's getting did.
I love it.
Working with someone like Aaron Mack is that's awesome, because he, like you said, he stands for quality. He's been around for a long time, like some of the other guys, and every piece he makes is really top notch. So we couldn't be happier working with him, and you know, hopefully there will be more to come.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Where can guys out there who are looking to start their builds, or girls, or whoever, where can they find you guys? How can they get in touch?
Through Facebook. We're mostly on Facebook, so you can reach us at CNA Prop Design. Out there, and feel free to message us. We answer any questions. We're pretty prompt with all our messages, and we're happy to help and answer any questions also.
I love it. It's going to be great seeing what is to come from you guys. Again, you kind of went through what you guys offer. You got the ribbon cables. When those make a run, people got to jump on those. You've got, as of right now, you've got, it's a different, is this a version 2, you said, of the leg hose connector?
Yeah, this is version 2.1. So okay. It's still the same mold, but I did some handcrafting to the actual cast first before I molded it, and then started pulling my rubber molds out of it. So it's a little more friendly on the eyes. I think it's a better design. So
that'll be sick to check out, because I'm going to have to do that, because I got a suit that I'm still using, the 3D printed one, which you can find all over the place. And those, you know, work great for, you know, a little bit of time, but then you want to kind of move on up and kind of expand, you know, your suit. And so that'll be awesome to check out from you guys. And again, people can do that. They can go over there and check it all out on Etsy. Are you guys on Etsy, or do you have the specific website?
We are literally just on Facebook. We just have our Facebook page, CNA okay. Prop Design. Yeah, we're old school, man.
Hey, and that takes us back to what Matt did. He hit you guys up directly about a certain color, wanting for his leg hose connector and leg hose, and you guys were able to accommodate. And if, you know, people might have a wild idea, they should hit you up and see what may be able to come of it, huh?
Right. If anybody has any commission job that they'd like us to take on, either myself or Andrew, we can look into it. And yeah, if we can't do it, we'll point you into the direction of somebody who can.
Yeah, just ask us any questions you have. Message us. We have ears open and eyes open. And, you know, we know some people now. So, you know, we can hopefully take care of what you need.
I love it. Corey, Andrew, CNA Prop Design, you guys are amazing. So glad you came on the show. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us, man.
All right, that was Corey and Andrew with CNA Prop Design. And if there's one thing to take away from that conversation, it's this. The difference between a decent build and a great one usually isn't the big pieces. It's everything in between. The way things connect, the way they function, the stuff you don't notice until it's wrong. That's where the builds either come together or they fall apart. And that's what I want this show to keep doing. Not just showing you what's out there, but helping you understand how to think through your own builds and make them better. If you've got something out of this one, I appreciate you being here, because we're just getting started right here on Bench Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast.